Welcome to Juice. I'm Emily Harmon.
I'm Gwen Douglas. And today we're welcoming back...
Tor Goodmanson.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
We're happy to have you again.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here again.
And today it's a little bit different because you have bought a selection of wine. So we're in your hands today. So what have you bought for us to try?
Right. So today we're going to be drinking four South African wines. One is some bubbles, pretty good bubbles. And then three representatives of this really exciting generation of winemakers centered around the Swartland. Two Chenins, very different Chenins, and a Pure Sasser.
Cool.
So let's start with some bubbles.
Sounds amazing.
We love a bit of fizz.
We do love a bit of fizz.
So this is a 100% Chardonnay from the Robeson wine producing region, which is slightly inland in South Africa and quite a warm climate. It's also, I think, where Graham Beck, which is the best known sort of producer of South African bubbles, sources most of their grape. But it's made by a guy called Henk van Niekerk, but the wine is actually called Paul René, to give it that sort of little French touch.
So the full name of the wine?
Paul René MCC. For Méthode Cap Classique.
MCC non-vintage?
It is a non-vintage.
Okay.
Absolutely. And it's a Brut.
So if I wanted to find this online, I'd write Paul René MCC and I'd find it.
Absolutely.
Oh, and so hang on a minute. The winemaker's name is?
Henk van Niekerk.
I love it. And it's Paul René.
Yeah. So Henk,
make it sound French. It sounds much more exotic.
Absolutely. And he... He played rugby for Saracens, actually, sort of, he spent one season, he said, as a winger there, and actually sort of played a twig in him in the final of the Middlesex Sevens against the Barbarians in 1997, wow, where they lost. But yeah, he's a good guy generally, and him and his wife are behind this project, and they do two wines, a Brut and a Rosé. And we've just started shipping the Brut because I thought it was actually quite a nice bubble.
So Méthode Champenoise.
Absolutely.
Aging on the lees.
So talking about 15 months on the lees. You know, in a lot of these places in South Africa, and if you look at some of the regions where they grow Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, you've got quite a lot of cooling influence from the sea and from the winds because there is no landmass between that southern bit there and the South Pole. But what do you think?
Mm, very nice. I quite like it. So it's Brut. Nice creaminess about it. The mousse is very delicate. It's got all those autolytic, yeasty flavours that are there that are nice, but this citrusy freshness on the finish.
But it's also not super acidic.
It's
an easier session probably because your stomach's probably not going to be as upset.
And I guess that's where the climate comes in as well.
Yeah, I was going to say the fruit is a bit rounder.
It's riper
that's
fruit.
I mean.
And
2015, Paul René MCC Brut. Food pairing.
I mean, I think because it's a little rounder, I love this with some creamy cheese.
Mm-hmm. It'd be great.
Absolutely. Could do with that. You know, oysters or some, sort of prawns or shellfish that's got a little bit of sweetness in it.
Yeah, agreed.
Prawns for sure, yeah.
Some grilled prawns would be lovely.
Because
just grilled prawns
little...
with a bit of salt on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Yeah, but I think something, not always the what you would put necessarily champagne or things that are a little higher acidity. I think this is more interesting. Like you said.
But but as you pointed out earlier, something you could easily drink as an aperitif wine. And you know, it's true that some of them can be. You only want one glass actually, because after a while the acidity gets you.
Yes.
But in this one, you're not going to have that problem.
I think good session wine. Then we could say
good session wine. Absolutely.
Got some stuff to talk about. Get a bottle of it.
There's quite a lot going on with the label, right? Because the label's quite classic, and then there's all these different stickers on. So that is that awards that it's got on there then.
Yeah, absolutely. And with us, it's the stickers, I guess a lot of producers actually quite like them. For us, it just means that the most junior member of the staff has to spend a lot of time peeling them off because we don't like stickers at the wine rooms.
Yeah.
Do you have an implement that you use for scraping stickers?
Or fingernails.
Just a fingernail.
So everybody's frantically filing down their nails before work because they don't have to do that job.
Not on sticker duty. But you actually peel them off beforehand.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough, because it makes it look a bit cheap.
It does
a bit tacky.
Bit
it's a bit Dan Murphy's. Dan Murphy's is a chain of bottle shops or wine and spirit shop in Australia. What I'm interested about here is I can see this one sticker and it says SA Women's Wine and Spirits Awards. Little drawing of a woman.
Well, that's why it's a good session wine. If you've got things to talk to your girlfriends about, get a bottle of this. Not going to get gut rot from that.
Gut rot.
You know, it means
we are only promoting non-gut rot wines.
I think it's interesting that there should just be that panel should have set itself up. SA Women judging wines.
So it's just women judging wines. I think power to them. Why do women need a separate category for judging?
Really, I mean, they do this in tattooing a lot because they'll have women's conventions. And as much as I understand that women need a platform for some things, it's also having those things sometimes keeps us too separate. Well, we have to have like our own special little club on the
yeah.
side.
World's 50 Best Restaurant Awards.
And then they do female...
Female chef, what? We need it. A separate category because nah. we're not good enough to compete with the men?
Sorry. yeah. No, I mean, you know, I see your point, but I think...
Yeah, I'd like to challenge any man that thinks he can do his job better than I can.
No, that's a good point. But
we'd love to meet you.
The food industry and the wine industry is still sort of massively male dominated.
Sure. Yeah, I understand.
So you can see why people try.
They're pushing back.
Yeah, absolutely. British Icelanders sort of wine awards.
Yes.
My category.
Yeah, that's definitely a niche. Yeah, that's definitely you're carving your own niche there. Wine rooms ratings is put a sticker over all of these stickers with drink this on a Thursday.
Yeah, but I don't like scores.
Okay, not a score, but this wine is for brunch.
You've got like, are you salmon?
Booze with your eggs.
That's what you're having.
Booze with your eggs.
Lonely hearts.
Lonely hearts wine. Have you had a bad day of work? Boss messing with you. In
stress
desperate
wine.
Need of a holiday. Yeah, different wines for different things.
In need of a bit of pleasure. Gewurztraminer.
Why not? For any occasion. Yeah, really lovely.
I liked that a lot, actually.
But this one is, this one is a bit of an outlier because he's, ideally I wanted to bring a pet nat from Craig Hawkins, who's another of our sort of great friends and who has been very much a sort of pioneer in the natural wine movement in South Africa.
But unfortunately, his wines are too popular that they've sold out and we're waiting for the new vintage.
Oh, exactly.
I checked in Germany and Tor was waiting for the wines to arrive in London. They didn't arrive in time.
No. So that will be maybe another... another topic to explore at some stage. But this brings us on to the Swartland. And it's, the Swartland is just a really exciting area, actually, because it's a bit like the Roussillon was in France a while ago. It wasn't highly prized as a wine growing area. And so it meant that, a lot of pioneers were able to go in there on a budget, but
they could do whatever they wanted.
They could do what they wanted more, and, they would not necessarily have enjoyed the constraints of being in a more traditional area. So it meant that, people like sort of Eben Sardi, Adi Badenhorst and so on, who already now to the, they're the older generation, sort of moved in there and in their wake, this really exciting sort of generation of winemakers, probably sort of inspired by Craig Hawkins as well, has really taken hold there. And so we're looking at three wines here. The first one is going to be a straight Chenin Blanc.
Oh, great. See, when I think of South African white wine, Chenin Blanc is the go-to grape because it's very much at home there in the same way that it is in the Loire. If you think of this grape variety, you think Loire Valley
and I think
or
South Africa.
South Africa.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, possibly questionable exactly how long it has been there.
Okay.
Because I think the first Dutch or French got there, it was probably more something like Muscat that they were bringing along.
Okay.
But it's been there for a while. Yep. It used to be known as steen, as in stone. In Afrikaans. And in the Paardeberg, which is this mountain,
Hang
the southern
on,
edge of the...
Took me a minute.
Yeah.
The grape variety was known as
steen.
Steen is the local word for it.
Yeah. Saint-Saur was called Hermitage there.
Hilarious. Yeah.
Hence Pinotage, which is a cross between Pinot Noir and Saint-Saur.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
Good geography.
It's a granite mountain at the southern edge of the Swartland. Mm-hmm. So granite and decomposed granite, so basically, sand from granite.
Yeah.
It seems to have a particular affinity for Chenin Blanc.
Okay.
It produces some of the greatest Chenin Blancs, I think, anywhere in the world. And you can have arguments about whether the Loire is better or other. There's different terroirs.
Right.
But this is definitely a very interesting terroir. It's still in its infancy over there, but I think it's definitely the place where you're going to see some, single vineyards, some real sort of crews being sort of labelled there.
So the first one, how do you say that?
Swerver.
Swerver. So you say it almost like German because it's like swerver.
Yeah, exactly. Swerver. W's are V's and V's are F's, basically.
Swerver.
Yeah. So Swerver is a wanderer.
Okay.
And some of it is the philosophy behind some of those guys who actually they were part of the sort of post-apartheid generation, so they had the freedom to go and travel without excessive visa restrictions and sort of learn from various places. So these guys have all, they've all done sort of vintages with Tom Loeber at Matassa, who we mentioned in a previous sort of podcast.
Yeah.
And Tom used to farm at the observatory on the Paardeberg before he got married and moved to France. Jasper was Adi Badenhorst's winemaker or assistant winemaker. Mm-hmm. He still kind of is, but he's now established his own cellar.
This is just to give you the context, Gwen, so you know that Chenin Blanc secateurs that you have?
Yes.
A.A. Badenhorst, that's who Tor is talking about now.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Adi Badenhorst is one of the figures of of the Swartland.
He's making a larger volume of wine, but they're bloody good and really good prices.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ridiculous value for money.
Absolutely. No, it's really, really good.
So this is Sverva Chenin Blanc 2017.
2017, absolutely. So Jasper was one of the... he's been very lucky, actually, in the sense that he's done this sort of Burgundian thing. And his wife, who is Ardi's sort of neighbour, actually owns a farm and farms the grapes. So Francisca is a, you know, cool sort of farmer. And people, you know, fight to buy her grapes. And Jasper says, well, you know, he still has to pay the same price as everybody else, but at least he gets first dibs on the grapes. The farm is called Vattenfall. It's just it's the southernmost sort of valley on the Paderberg. Really beautiful place, worth a visit. Let the wine do the talking.
Yeah, cool. Really interesting. Thank you.
So quite a warm vintage. You know, it's one of the real sort of drought years, which, you know, 2018 still will be, but at least they did get some rain in the second half of 2018. So 2019 will, you know, although it takes the grapes some time to recover from the drought shock, from stressed grapes. Mm. I mean, this is still pretty good.
I mean, a little bit of stress is also helpful sometimes for vineyards. I mean, initially when you first open it, there's a touch of reduction on the nose. So there's that little bit of them. And for those who don't know what reduction is or how you can smell it, there's that little bit of this sort of struck mat.
Whole bunch was fermented in old oak basket press, and then 10 months of further aging before.
What that is a hell of a wine on the palate. Really enjoy the roundness, the creaminess, but this freshness and almost this spiciness on the finish is really nice. What do you think of this, Gwen?
Yeah, I think the nose didn't give it away, so it was a little bit of a surprise, actually, to taste it.
I'd almost carafe it initially, this wine. Yeah. I'd just chuck it in a decanter.
So I said washed butter, which sounded weird.
Yeah, I frowned at it, so I said, what the hell is washed butter, and who is washing it, and why are you washing it? What are you washing it with?
It's like, when you're making butter, is that like the moment where you're taking those fats and swishing them around in water, and for some reason that popped into my head. Like fresh butter. So in creaminess, I was thinking dairy, like fresh butter as you're making it.
So I was thinking about you with your hands in the sink, with a sink full of fairy liquid, scrubbing your butter.
Well, that sounds like a euphemism for
something else.
And
I thought, she's bloody long. Anyhow.
Let's not go there.
Okay,
No, anyway, it was quite a surprise. Because I think the nose for me was dairy, some maybe minerality a little bit.
You're still getting the Chenin qualities, like this little bit of bruised apple, fresh apple, citrus.
And quince and so on. And
definitely,
lots of,
but it's definitely bigger and rounder also than the... Also, again, not a huge amount of acidity. Not massive.
So I think without the acidity, which is sort of pretty high there, this wine would be flabby because of the conditions of the vintage. But I think one of the beautiful things with which pretty much all of those guys who are sort of making wines from grapes on the Paderberg have achieved, in the peak of the right time, you know, it's a bloody hot area.
Yes, actually.
When
absolutely.
I was there for, you know, for Ryan and Sam's wedding on the Saturday, it was 35 degrees, 37 degrees. You know, come the evening, you get that sort of wind, that breeze coming from the ocean, and it can get cold very, very quickly.
You're getting this build-up of sugar... Sure. In the daytime, and then you're letting the sort of acid levels or the plant rest in the evening.
So I'm going to contextualize what I said about the acidity not being high. And maybe that's also because I don't drink a lot of wines from the New World.
Yeah.
Which means I'm drinking a lot of European wines whose acidity levels are potentially sometimes too high.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes if I'm drinking something from somewhere else, like I don't drink South African wines super often.
Yeah.
For me, it's not high just relative to the other things I'm drinking.
I kind of want to rib her a little bit because she drinks Gewürztraminer, which has incredibly low acidity. So I feel she's like being a bit of a hypocrite.
No, but I think that, like, you know, if I'm used to drinking Chenin, you drink it from the Loire, sometimes the acidity is like out of control. Where actually it makes it difficult to drink because the acidity is so high.
Sure.
So
you're always dabbling in extremes, Gwen.
I know. But I also think that sometimes it's contextual. So me saying that I think the acidity isn't high doesn't mean that it's not...
I think it's a very balanced wine.
I think
absolutely.
It's very balanced. Yeah. So I think for me, because I'm used to drinking wines whose acidities are much higher...
With maybe less texture.
Right. Yeah. Seems less. So I just wanted to clarify that without being...
Yeah. No. I think it's a great wine. And sort of it's...
It's delicious.
It's all right. You're allowed to taste the next wine. Now.
Thanks. Yeah. Otherwise, I'll just go like sit in the corner and weep gently.
And Jasper,
just smell the wine over and over again.
Jasper doesn't buy the stickers, but Tim Akin gave it a 95, which is
is that good?
He does. You know, his report is quite a big piece of work and quite an encyclopedic at this African wine industry.
Okay. Is that one of his areas of focus then?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
A question that you're itching to know the answer to or are wanting to answer. What would you eat with this, Gwen?
I actually would love this with a risotto, something creamy.
That's a good call. Mushroom risotto with some prosciutto melting over the top of it. Sunday roast.
Delicious. Schmaltz.
Goose fat potatoes.
Schmaltz on toast. It's like chicken fat. Chicken fat on toast.
Well, you know, but I think even bangers and mash. Bratwurst.
Mac and cheese.
Mac and cheese.
Only if you were going to make the mac and cheese with something a little fancier than North American mac and cheese.
You have to put a little bit of mustard in there. You put a bit of mustard in your mac and cheese. And breadcrumbs on top.
Oh, go on, push a boat out, some truffles.
Yeah, truffle mac and cheese. Oh, and actually, anything like egg and truffle or tagliatelle truffle could be quite nice.
Yeah.
It's always really nice to try new stuff, but that's actually not the case. It's really nice to try new stuff that actually tastes good.
Yes.
Because you try a lot of new stuff and then you're like, oh, no.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice wine.
But, you know, the reason why we sort of focus on that bit of South Africa in particular, but on the new South Africa and it started importing some wines from there, is because we think it's such, at the moment, the quality that you get for the price is unequal.
No, it is. It's crazy, actually.
Like, I mean, when we've gone for dinner and we've wanted to keep the price down when we were in a group.
Yeah, we were drinking Molyneux, like even the Kloof Street range. When we've been with groups of friends. And not that into wine, don't usually spend too much by the bottle. We're like,
great,
just send that. We know it's safe, everybody will like it. It's interesting enough for us, but it pleases everybody, and we can drink a lot of it and not spend that much money.
Yeah, I think it's great,
which is brilliant.
Yeah, so for those of you that want to drink quantity with quality, drink SA.
Yeah,
so this next one is very intrigued.
It's a sheep's head.
Sheep's head.
So the
Yeah, the eyes give it away. It's not too crazy looking.
So the story behind it is that the smiley is that it's a sheep's head, half a sheep's head, and it's basically the cheapest cut of meat you can get there. It also happens
to
be
the smiley.
They call it the smiley because you see the teeth.
Yeah.
It also happens to be quite popular in Iceland and Norway because we have lots of sheep there.
Everybody loves that little teeth-bearing grin there.
Yeah, absolutely. The reason for the name is that this wine started off as being made from the cut-offs from the better wine. So we said, this is a cheap cut. This is a smiley.
I love it already.
But Emily has tried it.
I met Ryan and Sam in the summer in August.
Thank you.
Actually at wine rooms, Brackenby Wine Rooms, and got to taste a large amount of their wines. And I was really impressed. I'd only heard about the wines through tour before and I hadn't had an opportunity to try them. And I was really impressed with all of the wines. And they're two very decent people. So it's
absolutely
also nice to meet good people making delicious wine.
And Ryan is he's a fantastic geek in the sense that he is so geeky, but so enthusiastic. He loves his subject so much. And this is his wine that sort of, you know, he's ticking all the hipster boxes.
Yeah,
there's a nod to the Jura, there's a nod to Sherry.
Yeah, so the reason for that, though, is how this is made. So it's different Chenin Blancs made in different methods. So there's one under floor, isn't there? There's Chenin Blanc under floor.
Yep.
So there's some Chenin some with been, botrytis.
Yes, some has been Madeirized.
Yeah, Madeirized.
It's like a never-ending...
So the full breakdown, so under floor, Madeirized, oxidative.
Yeah, some of the, you know, the floor botrytis. One has... There's a little element of a Solera getting in there now with the various vintages. But it's a blend of four different vintages, essentially.
Amazing.
You know, the wines will get more complex as he accumulates more of his little cut-offs that he wants to blend into things.
So the name of the wine is Non-Vintage Smiley, and the colour of the sheep's head changes, doesn't it, every bottling?
With every one, absolutely. So this is V4, so the fourth vintage of this one.
So I have to say the smell is, like, unreal.
Umami. I'm in Japan with this wine. No, this wine must be amazingly in Japan.
Everywhere. Yeah. It depends on, like, how you corner your brain to smell it. You can smell pineapple, you know, like, overripe pineapple, and then you go suddenly, like, boop, you're over in a completely different direction. It's, like, taking
You're right, though. There is an exotic element, but there's also this orchard fruit that you always do Chenin.
Yep.
You've still got the apple, the quince, everything.
It's, like,
the creaminess, the lactic, but the nuttiness.
Yeah, it's really...
The yeastiness, that nutty yeastiness from the floor.
It's all there, and it's a really, in a really...
Honey, caramel.
Really nicely balanced package, actually. I think that's it.
Fucking good.
We're now distributing...
I knew you'd love this one. Yeah. I'm really excited.
That's it. It's a new... Is it the new Gewürztraminer?
No, let's not get that crazy. But this is very exciting.
I love how serious her face changed for a second there, where she's like, did you just say that?
No.
I feel that this should come above every Gewürztraminer that you've ever tried.
No, hang on. But Gewürztraminer is a great variety. Yeah. This is like someone's created art. This is what that is. And that's a different thing. A phenomenal idea.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think, is anyone else doing something like this? In this...
So I think that it's... I think Ryan was the first to push about that in those terms, yeah. But people are emulating the example that he started in South Africa.
Because this could be just a complete gimmick, but it tastes delicious. I kind of, because there's that like little Jura oxidative thing, it makes me think of like old grains, like ancient grains, which makes me think of like bulgurs or wheat. So like a beef stew with bulgur or something like that could be interesting. But I think because it's pulling me in every direction, I think you could probably pair this with pretty much anything.
With a lot of things, I think. Because I think, you know, you mentioned the Jura, you could have it with some lovely old Comté.
Yes.
But at the same time, when Ben Llewellyn from Carte Blanche, who came to South Africa with me in June, and he's now distributing the wines in the UK, Ryan and Sam took us to Indochine, which is the Asian restaurant, the De L'Air Chaff wine estate, which is very, very posh in Stellenbosch. But it's a beautiful Asian restaurant. And this wine with all sorts of Asian food.
Yes, totally.
Sort of was amazing with like sort of roast Korean pusa and things like
that. Well, one, Asian food definitely, because there's enough acidity in the wine for
sure.
I could
even also drink it with seafood, like langoustine.
I know,
lobster.
I heard you whisper that under your breath, langoustine.
Because I think there's like enough minerality that it's like, but it's some sweetness.
Oh, for sure,
in there,
yeah, absolutely.
It's like also really nice.
I think you're getting some, you know, there's lots of complex layers, but I think in this one, and in Jasper's one as well, you're getting sort of finishing on some oyster shells and that kind of sort of, there's a real sort of saline notes there.
Super.
So two wines are interesting because they're different expressions of Chenin from the same place. Yeah. This one is a bit more of a technical wine, more work, fair enough. This is possibly a purer expression of the terroir, but they're both sort of very true to what the Paardeberg produced.
For me, this was a real revelation, this wine. And trying it again sort of concretes my initial experience of the wines the first time.
I think why you were looking at me when I was trying it.
I know, because I was really excited for you to try this wine, because when I first tasted it, I was like, I don't know a wine that tastes like this.
And I think you first tasted the V3 when you came and had a drink with me and Rich at the winery.
Yeah, but it was very quick, wasn't it? And I liked it. And that, it's true, because I did a little Instagram post about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is really cool. And then very kindly was invited to lunch with the producers and got to know them and really, really like what they're doing wine-wise.
This is like a full package wine for me, because also I love the label, I like everything about it.
Yeah, it's the wine you would buy without tasting, because they've actually put thought into the design of the label. It's interesting, so it draws you in. There's no label like it.
And then it like delivers on that cool factor that you bought it for. You go, wow, that's cool. And then you drink it, you're like, wow, that's really cool.
So a friend of mine always says, you know, as soon as they see the wax top, they're like, I know, that's a sign of quality. And I'm like, that's absolutely ludicrous. But actually, there is a logic behind it. Because if you bought only wines with wax tops, 9 times out of 10, they're smaller producers because they're doing it by hand.
Yeah.
So the likelihood of you getting a better wine is a lot higher than just buying any old wine from the shop. So there is a truth to it, even though I've tried a lot of wax top wines that are average. But in this circumstance, the wax top rule definitely applies.
And in fact, and wax tops can be really annoying when you're opening them, when they're too brittle. But luckily, the Sappers seem to put a lot more plastic into their wax or something, so it's actually quite...
Is it plastic or paraffin?
But someone was saying, you just have to like rub the top, rub it with your thumb for a couple
minutes. When?
I know.
Where were you when somebody said, just rub the top of it?
But actually it works, because if you soften the wax just enough, you don't get any, there's no crack, there's no dust. It actually comes out just in a boop. That's an official term. Hashtag. But it really works. Oh, so now I do it at home.
Stop doing the gestures.
Well, next time I'm sort of faced with a bottle of François Coutas, I'll
next time you're on a date and you're rubbing that wax on the top.
There was a commercial for like ketchup years ago, I think in like Sweden or Norway or something. But it was this television commercial about like a young couple on a date, And, you know, you don't see anything below the chest. And he's like, you know, it's just like a ketchup bottle. And then you don't see anything else, but you just hear, and he screams. And they're like, Heinz. It's one of the greatest commercials ever made.
I've not seen that, and I definitely need to
see
it. I
have a thing for old advertisements, but yeah.
Sure, it's on YouTube.
It is definitely on YouTube. Because there's one more bottle, and you have it placed after this one.
So it's a red, actually. And so the guy who makes it, a man after your heart, I would think, sort of, because he now gets his tattoo artist to do all his wine labels. So I don't know if he did this one, but the current generation of wine labels are now all designed by his tattoo artist.
So I'm going to make a little aside right here. Any winemakers looking for labels, please contact me. I'd love to make some wine labels.
So Tremaine was the winemaker for the Molyneux. Mm-hmm. Went independent about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think so. The first vintage of this that we sort of tasted, he'd actually made in a plastic tub and covered with cling
really?
Film, basically. Amazing. It was that size of production.
Punk rock, so it fits the label.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a lovely, fresh expression of Sasso. And I mean, Sasso is a great, I don't know what you think, Emily, sort of, for example, but how much Sasso do you come across?
No, I've tasted a few, but I was actually going to say the same thing to you. But I mean, Sasso is an interesting grape variety. It's quite a large grape with a thicker skin than Pinot, but still not, the skin's not too thick. And the plants produce quite a lot of fruit as well. So it's quite easy to have quite boring Sasso because they can yield quite a lot of fruit. But I find Sasso, when it's made well, a very, very interesting, alluring grape variety. For me, it's somewhere between French and Italian wine in the way that there can be a little bit more structure and a little bit more tannin and acidity than some other French varietals. And this aromatic profile, sometimes rosy floral notes that make it very, very charming when made well. And that's what I like about it. So I think I'm always curious to try it. There's not enough good examples of the grape, but when made well, very, very enjoyable. That's my 2 cents on Sasso.
Absolutely. And I think we should say sort of one of the unifying things amongst a lot of these sort of the wines that a lot of these Swarton producers are making is bush vines and old bush vines. So very low yielding wines, dryland sort of no irrigation. The grapes that, Sasso, when it's overdone, when it's yielding 100 hectares per hectare,
yeah,
is
watering and boring.
Uh-huh. But this is, you know, more likely to be sort of 20 to 25 or something like that. So you're getting that sort of extra sort of concentration. So a lot of fruit, not a lot of tannin, but it's a lovely wine.
What I love about this, the wine's almost transparent.
Yes, it's really
you can see
color.
Through it. It's lovely. Yeah.
It's like a
pair of tights.
Rancher.
20 Dernier tights.
Ooh, hello.
Yeah, it's very, very clear. It appears a little bit like Pinot Noir in the glass.
Yes.
And I like it because there is this sort of savoury, almost chemically sort of back note, like this tarry-ness to it, which makes it interesting.
Yet it's very fruity.
It's very, yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, fruit sweetness sort of coming through that. So it's actually quite I think it's actually quite an easy wine to enjoy. And actually,
And pure, not a grape variety that should be dominated by oak at all.
No.
I think this is really a grape variety where you want to fuck around with it as little as possible. For
absolutely.
Lack of a better word, you don't want to mess around with it.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, I think it doesn't do oak.
The idea of an oaky Sasso sounds horrific
just
to me.
Just wrong.
Yeah. Just wrong. It's criminal. It's nothing worse in the world than oaky Sasso. So don't even think about it. Minority Report. We're coming after you if you even think about
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Just no thinking.
Yeah. No, this is delicious. I also think I tasted this at Wine Rooms with you.
You probably have, actually. Yeah, absolutely.
I remember the label.
I would probably prefer to drink it a tiny bit colder than it is. But that's my taste for a light red.
A little bit on a chill could be nice, yeah, for sure.
That's probably how I would...
I don't think this is too warm, though.
No. But I would say that my preference would be a little colder.
Yeah,
but that's perfect.
Yeah, but there you go. Sort of.
Do you want an ice cube, mate?
I'm alright.
Because you're not getting one.
Or fridge it overnight and have it with brunch tomorrow.
Yeah. Like that's that really nice. Those wines for me, yep. Pourinet, that would be a good go-to sparkling for me, where I think it's really well made. This would be a really nice introduction to South African wine for a lot of people because it's not scary in any way, and I think it ticks a lot of boxes for the cava drinker, the champagne drinker.
Great brunch wine because it's rounder, easier.
Yeah, I think, yeah, maybe for the cava drinker or a good Cremant. And then I think the other wines... For me, I almost feel they have a bit more personality, particularly the last two that we tried. I love that Smiley because it's such an individual, singular wine. It's hard to decide my favourite, but I'd be somewhere between Smiley and this Sanso because I love the purity of the Sanso. It's delicate, but it's giving with its fruit and its flavour. Yeah, that would be where I'm at. And not because the first Chenin was
really
nice.
I really like the first Chenin. Yeah.
So Gwen, a quick recap. Your foods for those three wines?
So this is what I'm trying to figure out, the foods for this Sanson, because I have to say, as a novice, don't know if I've ever had any single varietal Sanson.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I actually don't know this grape that well. Mm-hmm.
This is a very good starting point for you, Gwen, for the grape variety, I think. I think this really represents all of the positive things of that grape variety.
Yeah, it's very nice, very light. I'm going to ask you guys what you would eat with this, because I think this is, I have some ideas.
Grilled quail with pomegranate. Yeah, I've been thinking about that. I've been thinking about it for a while. So at Marito Hackney Road, they were doing these grilled quails with like pomegranate molasses and stuff. And I think that would be killer with this.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a light meat that's not too strongly flavoured.
Very specific.
Middle Eastern. Middle Eastern light meat grills. Yeah, chicken, totally. Middle Eastern chicken.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think with all these wines also, you've got to think of the place and the fact that these guys love their barbecues, their braais.
Yes.
And so all of these wines would go really well with sort of bride shellfish or bride sort of meats or that kind of thing.
Because the only reason I didn't say anything is because it was actually going to go back to a sort of in between two of the things that I'd said before, which I actually think, again, a mushrooms risotto or old grains or something sort of, because there's this like umami-ness about it, but also a lightness. So you don't want to like overkill it with something too heavy.
Yeah. No, when we, you know, when we go to see, when we go to see Jasper, for example, he sort of, you know, he'll drive us into the sort of vineyards and sort of suddenly he'll have set up a braai and he's doing some blue wildebeest sort of in there to have with the wine. Yeah, wow. Brilliant, it's amazing.
I mean, we'll talk about it after. I want to know what
wine. No, I want to do it on, what is it, the fuck is a wildebeest?
What is it? Because I imagine something really crazy when I hear that.
A warthog.
I imagine. Yeah, you're right, Pumbaa from The Lion King. Pumbaa.
I was like, she said Pumbaa and I went, I don't know what the fuck she's on about.
He's a warthog.
Then she said Lion King and I went, okay.
Yeah, Pumbaa gone wild though, like can wildebeest.
Potentially bring back, what was it, pork enhancer?
But it's not a
pork booster and porkiness.
So from the episode a couple of weeks ago, we would say
pork booster.
Yeah, so wildebeest is like a...
Is it a pork booster?
No, I think it's not a pork. I think it's more in the antelope family.
I have to be honest. I did think it was somewhere between an antelope and a Pumbaa.
Shut your face! What are you even talking about?
You know what
I'm talking about. It's
yeah, I knew you were wrong, but I didn't say anything.
I think an antelope is also a bit Lion King, though, isn't it? Something. It would be something from the Lion King.
Don't. Right now. It was one of the animals from the Lion King, is what we have.
Yeah, but I don't think it was a lion.
I'm literally crying right now. It's really.
So maybe your next theme should be eat your way through the Lion King or the Jungle Book or something.
Yeah, or just like, what is a wildebeest? Who knows? Who can let us know?
Someone
what does a wildebeest look like?
Can someone send us a picture of a wildebeest, please? Somebody. But like a picture you took. Do people take pictures of wildebeests?
I feel like they're like one of those animals that exist, but we don't really know they exist. They're like a mythical...
Can we get David Attenborough on the podcast? To be like, we definitely know that they exist, and they have existed for many years.
I know, I would my life would be complete if David Attenborough ever came on our podcast.
I mean, I love him to bits.
I think there is no one better on TV than David Attenborough. There's David Attenborough, then there's Sir Trevor McDonald, then there's Michael Caine, and it doesn't really get much better than that.
I would love David Attenborough could read me bedtime stories forever. It'd be the greatest thing. Just the loveliest it's hot. Voice. No, I just love his voice. I could fall asleep to that voice. Good night.
Anyway, I feel like we should write to him and say, please come on our podcast and talk about wild beasts.
I think you might need to do image as well as sound for David Attenborough.
Yeah, boom.
Really lovely tasting with you. Thank you so much, Tor, for bringing four wines that neither of us... Well, I knew two of them very briefly, but actually really nice to sort of delve into them for both of us, I think, Gwen. We'll definitely be exploring South Africa a little bit more. One day we will make it there together.
Yes, it would be lovely. I've never been. You'd love to visit.
For those people who want to find these wines, Germany, I don't think they're being distributed, at least to my knowledge at the moment. So the UK...
So Wine Rooms has them. Carte Blanche Wines distributes them to the trade.
Any wine shops?
And the Good Wine Shop has them.
Great.
The Quality Wine Shop, Gus, has them.
Great.
So they're available in a few places.
And will we be expecting more interesting South African stuff coming from you?
Listen, I can wax lyrical about some of the other areas because I think the Swarten virus has spread to a new generation in Stellenbosch, in the southern regions.
So we'll have to meet up again and try some more South African stuff with you.
We might have to do that.
Yeah. So for those of you, we'll post links and we'll tag in all the winemakers and where to find the wines in the UK, of course. But obviously go down and visit Tor and his crew at all of the wine rooms that you can find.
Yeah. Or if you're in Liverpool, Bobby at Bunch Wine Bar in Liverpool.
Oh, really?
Okay, great.
Oh, I've got lots of clients in Liverpool. Yeah. Send them your way.
Send them your way.
Very fine.
But for those of you that want to stay in touch with us and stay tuned to all of our news, you can find us on Instagram at juice.podcast.
And you can find us at Twitter at
juice_podcast.
And on the website at juice.show, where you can also find a link to email us. And we really would love to see your wine bottles, what you're drinking, what you're eating for lunch, whatever. Show us your sessions. Thank you again, Tor, for visiting us.
Again, thank you. Two times. We're very privileged to have your company.
I mean, you know how to treat the ladies right. You brought us four bottles, so I think
it's going to have to be six bottles next time.
So, Emily, until next week.
Thank you, Gwen.
And thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Tor. Thank you. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers to SA.
Cool. Cheers to you guys.